have now three talks, so what I suggest is that we keep now a little bit more time, so we have 25 minutes per talk and then 5 minutes for discussion, so we don't miss dinner, I guess, this time. So please.
Okay. So, hi, my name is Ning Bao. I'm currently a postdoc at Caltech, and today I'm going to be talking about the holographic entropy cone, a paper that I wrote recently with these people. Jamie is in the audience, and I think Michael is also in Canada, but at another university. So let's start our discussion of the holographic entropy cone with quantum mechanics. So we know that entanglement entropy obeys a certain set of inequalities. The list of proven inequalities that are not what are called conditional inequalities is as follows. So there's subadditivity, Araki-Lieb, weak monotonicity, strong subadditivity, and positivity. So these are the known quantum inequalities that are not conditional. What I mean by a conditional inequality is an inequality that's true if another condition is satisfied. For example, conditional inequality would be an inequality of this type. So if this is equal to zero, then some more restrictive constraint. These inequalities are not of that type. These inequalities are always true for all quantum systems. Now, given some list of inequalities, especially given that the most recent of these inequalities was discovered, I think, about 50 years ago, you might ask the question of, is this the sufficient, necessary and sufficient list for all quantum inequalities? And it turns out that the answer to that question is no. So let's discuss, in order to define what I mean by that, I need to define what an entropy cone is. Yes?
Do you mind reminding us what the weak
monotonicity is? Oh, sure. So weak monotonicity is, I'm going to drop the S's for convenience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these two, it's easy to see how they transform into each other. Yeah.
How many of those are independent?
That depends on what you mean by independent. So I'll explain what I mean in a second. All right. So the entropy cone. So the entropy cone is, in some sense, a parameterization of the phase space in entanglement entropy that states of a given type may possess. So for example, the quantum entropy cone is the phase space of potential entropy, of potential entanglement entropies that a quantum state can possess. So generally, if I draw the two-dimensional entropy cone, which is the only one that I can draw because it's in three dimensions, that means that the axes are this, where we neglect to write S of 0 because S of 0 is always 0. So it's 2 to the n minus 1 dimensional axes, where n is the number of parties or distinct systems in your system. And then what you do is you write down the inequalities that are true for those systems, and then you use those to cut the space into a bunch of half spaces, and the intersection of all of the half spaces is a cone. And that cone is called the entropy cone.
Just to be clear, you're cutting based on this list of inequalities and not based on checking which things are actually positive.
That's the second thing that you do. So the first thing that you do is you cut with the inequalities that are known to be true, and that will give you a cone that you know to be at least as large as the true entropy cone. But of course, the second step of that, now that we've satisfied a necessary condition, is to prove that this cone is sufficient. I think I have those in the right order, whatever. So what you do in that situation is then a cone has extremal rays that define the convex hull of the cone. And if you can prove that every extremal ray you can create a state that has those specific entanglement entropies in that specific ratio, and you can do this for each extremal ray of the cone, then you've also proven that the cone is sufficient. That is because in that case, then you can show that the cone is at most as large as the true entropy cone. And then you sandwiched it down to the correct thing.
You want to show that the cone is as big as the one in general, and then that would get into
sufficient. Yes. And you also want
assuming
to.
Assuming that.
you need to make sure that the convex hull is, that every point on the convex hull is achievable. Right.
And you're interested in this for all quantum systems, not just some specific one?
Right, for all quantum systems.
I mean, you're taking as granted that the true entropy cone is a convex cone.
Yes. That may be a bad assumption, but I'm going to go with it for now.
Does that follow from, like, the convex to the other entropy?
No, I don't think people actually have a good have a formal reason to believe that all entanglement entropy constraints need to be linear constraints. But all entanglement entropy constraints thus far found have been linear constraints. So let me continue for a second, and you'll see what I mean. So with this definition of the entropy cone, the good news is that the 2 and 3 body, or party, I'll use this word in the future, cones, these are done. So with these things, we know that these inequalities are sufficient to characterize the 2 and 3 body quantum cones. So for the 2-body cone, in fact, all you need are subadditivity, positivity, and Araki-Lieb, not unsurprisingly, because the other two are involve 3 parties. And for the 3 parties, you need all of them. So Nima, this is what I meant when I said that, like, it's not, when I said it depends on what you mean by them being independent. Certainly, if I've proven strong subadditivity, I can certainly immediately transform that into a proof of weak monotonicity just by changing what I identify to be the purifying region. But in order to specify the complete cone, what you need is you actually need to intersect both strong subadditivities and weak monotonicities. So in that sense, in the constraint sense, you actually need all of them. You can't just ignore the ones that are dependent on the others.
But if you prove strong subadditivity, you basically have all these.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Yeah. Right. So this, it looks good so far, but then it gets bad very quickly. So for the 4-party cone, we know that in fact those inequalities are not sufficient. Right. So for the 4-party cone, we know that those inequalities are not sufficient, and in fact we can prove that there are 2 families of inequalities that emerge for the 4-party cone that you can demonstrate. So when I say 4-party cone right now, what I mean is a cone that's generated by these sets of inequalities and no further inequalities. For that cone, you can prove that two families of extremal rays cannot be constructed for any quantum state. So what this strongly implies is that there needs to be additional quantum inequalities that further constrain 4 parties and above. But because direct proof of quantum inequalities is extremely difficult, no one has yet been able to prove the existence, I guess they've proven the existence, but no one has been able to prove what specifically these 4-party inequalities are. There are conjectured inequalities out there. None of them have been proven.
If you just take states at random and plot out where they appear in the space, then you...
Yeah, so you could do some Monte Carlo thing, right? Where then you try to identify what the further inequalities are. But, and people have done that, and they've done this to, and they found some conjectured inequalities that are believed to potentially be true. Things called, I think one of them is called the Zhang-Yung inequality, which is specifically a 4-party inequality. But no one knows how to prove that it's true. And because I guess this subset of quantum information is a little closer to math, they care about being able to prove exactly that it's true. Right, so the quantum case for me is too difficult to approach. So I guess what I'm interested in doing is to see if I can simplify this construction by considering it in the case of holography. So let's talk about the holographic entropy cone. So as I believe every person in this speaker that's spoken so far has written down, I'm going to write down the Ryu-Takayanagi formula again, just so we don't somehow forget it. So now, the nice thing that this does is, because I'm not a very good person when it comes to being able to prove things in this case, is it allows me to convert proofs about entanglement entropies into proofs about geometry. So what this does is this really sets up a relationship between entanglement entropy in the boundary with geometry in the bulk. So this may seem like an obvious statement for holography, but what this really does is that this dramatically simplifies the form of proofs. And in fact, we've seen in the past how this does simplify the form of proofs through Matt and Tadashi's work, and also through Patrick Hayden and Alex Maloney's work also with Matt. So one additional inequality that's immediate to prove is this monogamy of mutual information inequality, which, just for the sake of completeness, I'll write down like this. Right, so this is the inequality, and let me just sketch what the cartoon version of this proof looks like. The cartoon version of this proof ends up being relatively straightforward. So if I have one thing, I can have three adjacent intervals like this. And I can say that, well, okay, so S of AB, S of BC, and S of AC are these intervals, right? And then what I can do is I can then draw these specific intervals. I'll do them in dotted lines, are this one, this one, this larger one. And so these two exactly cancel. And these two, I'm going to invoke the hooks are longer than circles in geodesic space argument to say that these can be partitioned into non-minimal covers of these minimal covers. And so what this means is that the left-hand side of the inequality is strictly greater than the right-hand side of the inequality. Because I can partition these two sections into this section plus this section. And it's clear that this section is longer than this interval, and this section is longer than this interval. Yes?
But you can write down immediately a state that violates this, no? This inequality? Like a GAT state.
Yeah, so that's true. And an interesting corollary of this statement is that you can't actually have a geometric GHD state in holography. So that's true, and what I just said is also true. Yes?
How much is known about time-dependent situations?
I'm going to talk to Aaron about that later, and I'll tell you by the end of the week, maybe. But I don't know right now. So anyway.
It's more or less been proven in time-dependent.
This thing, yes. With subject the same.
The same extent as Strunk's about it today.
But also, this could be also understood as rather than Strunk's probability being initial mutual information being positive, but being lower bounded by mutual information of A and C.
Yes, that's right. So this is a geometric proof, but geometry is still a little too hard for me to do. So I'm going to convert this into something that I understand a little bit better. So one way of describing this method is something called inclusion-exclusion. So I'm going to define what that means on a simpler example. So if I have two intervals, A and B, let's say that they have some overlap, then I can draw the Ryutaki-Nagi surfaces that correspond to A and B. And in particular, I can label the Ryutaki-Nagi surfaces that correspond to A and B like this. I can label this the 0, 0 region because it's the intersection of A complement with B complement. I can label this 1, 0, 0, 1, and 1, 1. Right? So in so doing, I can convert a geometry question, which is still too hard, into a question that becomes very much a convex optimization question. So then the question of whether or not this S of A plus S of B is greater than S of AB, I can convert into the following thing, right? So S of AB in this situation, just reproducing the above, is this. So that means that there is a 1 region and a 0 region that corresponds to S of AB. So all I need, the details of this I will not go into because I don't think I have time to prove, is that I need to prove that the distance between any two points, say x and y, and when I say distance here, I mean Hamming distance. If the distance between any two points, x and y, in terms of Hamming distance, is greater than or equal to the Hamming distance between what they map to on the, so this is the LHS, this is the RHS. The Hamming distance of f of x and f of y, then this statement, if I can show that it's true, is sufficient to prove that this statement is true for all holographic theories.
What is f of x?
Huh?
What is f of x?
Oh, so f of x, right. So what we can do is once we have these two pictures, we can map specific regions, like the 1, 0 region here, for example, we can map that to the 1 region. And the 0, 1 region, we can map to the 1 region. So the f of x is the map that takes regions of the left-hand side partition of the theory to regions on the right-hand side partition of the theory. OK. So let's see. So if you want to know specifically how this works, I'll explain later, but I don't have time. So I'm going to.
Is that the number of bits different?
Yes, that's right. OK, so what does this get us? Well, before I talk about that, let me just talk about the holographic cones, like I promised to do, in comparison to the quantum cones. So for the holographic cones, the full 3- and 4-party cones are known. And indeed, the only additional inequality that you need to add to the 3- and 4-party to the quantum inequalities from before is this HHM or MMI inequality. So you add monogamy of mutual information, and you're done. So you might think again that for 5 parties, again that adding MMI alone would be enough, but you end up finding that again this is not the case. So for 5 parties, you need more. You need more inequalities. And at the quantum case, remember, this is where we got stuck, because proving new inequalities in quantum mechanics is really hard. But in this case, as I just told you, proving new inequalities is just a matter of mapping 2 to the n point to 2 to the k points. Right? It's just, as long as you can find a consistent mapping that does this, you've proven a new quantum inequality. So in doing this, we were able to prove 5 new holographic inequalities. The most photogenic of which, because many of them are rather ugly, looks like the following. So this we call the cyclic inequality, which you can see why we call it that for somewhat obvious reasons. So what we have is that the sum of the cyclic 3 entropies is greater than the sum of the cyclic 2 entropies plus the 5 entropy. And indeed, this inequality we've also been able to prove generalizes to an infinite family of inequalities, where you can show that the cyclic k the sum of the cyclic k entropies is greater than or equal to the sum of the cyclic k minus 1 entropies plus the 2k minus 1 entropy.
By
doing this? You can, but it becomes combinatorically.
No, she does
difficult.
Think it's a consequence of MMI.
Oh, it's not. So it ends up being independent of MMI. And the reason why we can see this is actually somewhat related to the cones argument again, because you find that just applying MMI, there are certain extremal rays that you can't exclude, and you find that this inequality excludes new extremal rays.
Could this be written as sum of conditional information?
Yes, absolutely.
Is this some sort of discrete version of differential entropy?
Yes. So
the positivity of differential entropy in this discrete version?
Jamie, do you want to answer that?
Yes, exactly that.
Okay, good.
So then,
but I say it's a generalization of that fact. So differential entropy assumed a certain spatial relation of the regions.
Okay.
And this says there's something like differential entropy that looks like it unfolds more generally, sort of arbitrarily, like you choose A, B, C, D,
and C. Why do you have 5 of them? How arbitrary number of them?
There's one of these cyclic inequalities for as many regions as you like.
Okay.
So as you take this cyclic inequality and then k goes to infinity limit, and then you choose them all to lie on a boundary, it's exactly the bound on differential entropy.
So now that we have this technique, we have enough to produce an enterprise, right? So I'm going to write down, as any good businessman would do, the flowchart for this enterprise. So what we do is we find candidate inequalities, where the candidate inequalities are defined as inequalities that exclude an array for which we don't know how to construct a state. And then we use the method to the left to prove the candidate inequalities, if we can prove them. And if it's true, then we slice the existing cone with this new inequality to find out whether it generates any new states, whether it generates any new extremal arrays, and whether those extremal arrays are constructible. So we make a new cone. And then if the new cone does not have every single extremal array constructible, then we go back, we take the unconstructible ones, and we look for more candidate inequalities that exclude that system. Doing this allowed us to find these five new holographic inequalities. These five new holographic inequalities are not quite enough to close the five cone. We think we know what the two remaining inequalities that are necessary to close the five cone are. However, the contractor method that we're using to prove it seems to fail in proving these last two things. But it's not clear whether or not it fails simply because this becomes extremely computationally intensive.
Are these all only valid holographically, or any of them valid more generally?
Right. So that's an interesting question. So in a related paper that myself and Michael Walter and two other grad students at Caltech came out with, we seem to find that these inequalities are also true for topological systems. So for topological systems, the fact that there are two terms associated with the entanglement entropy for topological systems. The first term is a term that's proportional to the area, which exactly cancels for these inequalities because they're all what are known as balanced inequalities. And the second term is something called the topological, is some constant term. And naively, the easy way to see that it's true for those systems is that the left-hand sides of all of our inequalities have fewer terms in them than the right-hand sides. So then that means that because for topological systems, there's this constant, and in particular, this constant is usually a negative signed constant, it's true for all of those systems. But it's somewhat trivial.
But so is that. So that's so in my topological.
Yes, that's right. This is, in fact, what Preskill and Kateyev have called the topological entanglement entropy. You can actually show that all of the cyclic inequalities reduce to the topological entanglement entropy exactly, but that's not, I guess, the focus of this talk. So there are two additional inequalities that we believe to be true, but we can't quite prove them to be true. And so that is, in some sense, where we are. Any questions?
You mentioned a four-party inequality that was conjectured to hold for all systems. Does that, where does that fit in? Does that follow from MMI then?
So you can show that all of the four-party inequalities, you can show that the four-party inequalities that are conjectured to close the quantum cone all follow from MMI, as they would have to, because otherwise the holographic four-cone would not be closed.
Is that easy to write down, the conjectured one?
I don't remember the exact form, but apparently Mark does.
I just...
Okay. Adam.
At large end, what fraction of the entropy cone does the holographic entropy cone take up? What, as a function of n?
So that's actually...
Question two is, if you just sort of Monte Carlo probe points down from some sort of generic partition, does it pin the edge of the cone, or is it in the middle of the cone, or where is it?
So the reason why we're so confident that these two other inequalities are true is because we've taken our mathematician hats off for a second when we tried every conceivable Monte Carlo test that we can think of, and these all pass them. For example, what you can do is you can take the entropy ray that you can look at the extremal ray, and what you can do is you can perturb in a Monte Carlo way all of the weights of the entanglement entropies, and you can ask if any of those are constructible. And none of them are constructible. So that means that somehow these do need to be excluded. And you can show also that once you add in these two inequalities, the new extremal rays that are produced from these two inequalities that are constructible, if you try to perturb any of those in any way, they either take you inside the cone or they are no longer constructible. So every Monte Carlo test seems to imply that these two additional inequalities are also true.
And what proportion of the holographic entropy cone?
So that's actually a question that we keep on meaning to answer, but we never have. It's just a volume calculation that we haven't done, a relative volume calculation.
Even for like four parties? Is it most of it or almost none of it?
I think it's most of it. I think that the quantum cone does a fairly good job of cutting out most of it. And the holographic inequalities, the lower order ones, do a pretty good job of cutting out all of it. It's just there are some rough edges that need to be smoothed.
What about with classical information theory, do any of the, are there additional inequalities there?
Yes. So it's kind of funny. So you can actually prove that for larger numbers of quantum cones, that there are an infinite number of there need to be an infinite number of distinct inequalities. That you can prove that it's rounded in some places, in some sense, for the quantum cone. You can also prove that the classical cone also needs to be rounded. But interestingly enough, Michael Walter on this paper proved that the holographic cone is always polyhedral. So it may be that you have some sort of interesting inscription circumscription property with, between the quantum cone and the holographic, between the quantum cone, the holographic cone, and the classical cone. Did I say something wrong?
I'm just confused. So I understood. I was confused what you mean by in the quantum case there's an infinite number of inequalities. I thought we don't have any unconstrained ones that have been proven.
Right, but they somehow are able to prove that there need to be an infinite number of inequalities, not that they've found them. Yes?
So just one comment. So when it comes to quantum mechanics, if you reformulate your question differently, we do know the necessary and sufficient condition, meaning all inequalities. So there's an old work due to Winter and Linden and collaborators that says the only inequality that exists in quantum mechanics is monotonicity of relative entropy, and that's all. So all these supposedly should be able to rewrite them in the language of monotonicity of relative entropy.
That may be true, though it's not quite obvious. So
it's
so
obvious,
it is known that the quantum relative entropy cone, so if you define the cone for relative entropy, every single that cone is known to be complete for any number of parties. And it's very simple. It's just positivity and monotonicity, as you said.
Yeah, it's a Russian problem.
Right. But it's not clear to me at all how to translate that into this picture.
Yeah, but it's, yeah.
But you're right that it is true. Any other questions? All right, thank
you. What about constraints? We know particular cases of constraints in the quantum case of constrained inequalities.
Right, so are those these conditional inequalities that I was describing? Or are they?
Yeah, well, but not of that particular form, but they're.
Yeah, so what constrained inequalities are they're restrictions such that if you're on the surface of the cone, then some portion of that surface is cut off. So those are treated differently, and we don't have any new ones of those.
But we know what they are in the quantum case. I'm wondering if they hold in that
one. I'm sure that they do. It's I don't think it's possible for an inequality to hold for generic quantum systems and to not hold holographic.
Well, it's we showed that those follow from MMR.
Yeah.
All of the known Linden-Winter constrained ones follow from MMR.
Okay. Any other questions? I apologize for this being extremely brief and probably frustrating. If you have any more questions about the specific way.
2 minutes, by the way.
Okay.
So just to wrap up, I'm a little bit confused again about the interpretation. If I just reformulate this and package this in this interpretation, that these inequalities, these extra inequalities you're finding holographically are actually saying that differential entropy has to be positive.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Or that has some...
I think that's some of the inequalities.
It's stronger than that. It's not just... Maybe isn't it actually lower bounded by the entropy of the union? It's stronger than positivity, right?
Yeah, it is. It's essentially saying it's bounded by the entropy of the entire state. So.
Can you say it again? I don't understand.
It's greater than or equal to that last.
It's lower bounded by the entropy of the union of all of them.
Right, there's an ABCDE term.
I mean,
it's just
differential entropy or, the
is
bounded by the area of your
later,
black hole.
But I don't think it spoils it at all. This is, you're reaching the boundary, right? This is the term that your subsystem is not cyclic.
Like, if you have a black hole, then it's not just, and you're going all the way around it, it's not just positive, but it's bounded below by the area of the event horizon.
But for pure recessive hole? Okay, good.
Thank you for